Synthaholics, this is Aaron O'Brien. I have today Holly Michelle, and I have a very special guest who hasn't been on the show yet, is Michael Vine, Holly's husband. Welcome, Michael.
How's it going?
Good. We are talking about a movie that both of you requested. This is Ender's Game. This came out in 2013. But before we get into the movie, we have a little bit of news. Holly, Carl Urban talked about this, the Tarantino Star Trek movie that he's been talking about. And this is what Carl Urban actually said. He says, Quentin Tarantino went to J.J. Abrams' office and pitched him an idea for Star Trek movie. I know a little bit about it, and it's bananas. You shouldn't worry that it's going to be a full of obscenity and stuff. He wants to make an R rating to really make those beats of consequences land. If it's not PG, if someone gets sucked out into space, which we have all seen before, we might get to see them disemboweled first.
Wow.
It allows some breath, gives him some leeway to do that. To me, that's always one of the things I loved what DeForest Kelly did. He would actually capture the horror of space that looked in the eyes of sheer terror and always struck me as when I was a kid. So that was the gist of what he said at a a Star Trek festival or con. And so apparently he has some idea what's going to happen in this movie. And also it was pointed out that Tarantino wanted to utilize the current cast for the new reboots. So there you go. Tarantino, if that ever gets greenlit, and if Chris Pine isn't totally out of the picture for Captain Kirk, you know, who knows what we're going to get.
Right.
What do you think about that?
I mean, I think it's awesome, and it's probably about time. I mean,
you want to see a Star Trek with an R rating?
Yeah, why not? I mean, a lot of the people that have grown up with Star Trek are grown up, and if they're younger and they like Star Trek, they probably are more attracted to grown-up things. So I see no problem with it.
Yeah. Michael, have you ever liked any Tarantino movies? Reservoir Dogs?
Not really sure. Like
Pulp
not
Fiction?
Not really sure everything it plays into.
Quentin Tarantino, he directed Pulp Fiction. Let's pull him up here.
Reservoir Dogs. He did the, what's the one with the Nazi killers? I can't remember.
None of them sound familiar to me, but.
Didn't he do like Unbreakable? And
no, that's M. Night Shyamalan.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Shyamalan Ding Dong.
Quentin Tarantino. Let's see if there are any. Well, you've seen Django Unchained, right?
Yep.
Did you like it?
It amused me.
Kill Bill?
I laugh.
Did you like the
Kill Bill? Oh, Kill Bill? Yeah. How could I forget that?
Right? I forgot it too, so.
What's the one with Brad Pitt where they're World War II guys hunting Nazis? I can't remember the title of it.
Isn't that like World War Z or something?
No.
I don't know.
Yeah, whatever.
Do you know what year? Because I'm looking at it.
It's pretty recent. It's probably in the late 2000s or in the teens.
Did you know they announced a Kill Bill Volume 3?
I heard something about that. I don't know how that's going to work.
I don't know. But the untitled Star Trek project is on his IMDb, so interesting.
Yeah, I don't know. I keep hearing about it, and it's. I just wonder if it's greenlit. No, we haven't heard anything if it's actually ready to go. So, well, anyways.
By the way, Inglourious Bastards.
Inglourious Bastards, that's what it was. That's a fun movie. That's a fun.
I haven't seen it. It looks good, but I haven't seen it.
It is really good, except at the end, he kind of makes like an alternate history of what actually happens in World War II, and I mean, I'm not going to give it away just because you haven't seen it, but when you see it, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. I'm like, wait, that didn't happen. So,
word.
But anyways, so he's fun. I still wonder how he would actually dovetail into the Star Trek universe and how he would make that work, because he's got such a unique style. But I assume it would be a fun movie, and I'm sure it would get a lot of people to go see Star Trek. So,
and he wants to utilize the current cast.
That's what it says. Whether that's the case or not, who knows? Because, right, like I said, the budget concerns for this this current Star Trek IV, if you know, Chris Pine can't do it because they're not going to pay him enough. So,
can you explain that whole Chris Pine thing? Because I kind of usually skim over it because I hate those news sites like BuzzFeed, and there are a couple others. I just ignore them because they're the kind of sites that you click on and then you have to read like a paragraph and then hit next and it takes you to another page and you read another paragraph.
Yeah, clickbait stuff.
I flip the bird to all of those. Yeah. I can't handle those. So I actually have no idea what's going on with Chris Pine.
So Chris Pine obviously plays Captain Kirk in the new movies, and they wanted to get Chris Hemsworth, who is Thor. They wanted to get, because he played his father in the very first reboot.
Right.
They wanted to get him, and somehow there'd be some time travel that, maybe not time travel, but somehow that he is still alive. And
neither of those have been done in this franchise yet.
Yeah, exactly. But apparently, so Star Trek Beyond did not do incredibly well. It did okay, but not enough to make them go like, well, let's just make more movies. It did enough just them to greenlight another movie. But, you know, Chris Pine is kind of a big actor now. You know, obviously he's been in the Star Trek movies, but he's, you know, Wonder Woman and a whole bunch of other stuff. Chris Hemsworth is obviously Thor, so he's ultra popular, and they command top dollar. So, but unfortunately, Paramount Studios does not have that much money allotted for this, and it's too much for it. And there's negotiation problems right now because I don't think they can drum up the cash for it.
Gotcha.
So we'll see what happens. I mean, maybe they come to some kind of concession that they can work together, or maybe they'll recast Chris Pine for somebody else. That was another thing that was thrown out I saw earlier. So we don't know. We don't know what will happen.
Not a big fan of that last option.
Yeah. It'd be weird, you know, just to have all the same crew, but then somebody else is Kirk. But, you know, who knows? So let's get into the Ender's Game. This is this movie came out October 24th, 2013, directed by Gavin Hood. And it also was helped produce by some other Star Trek people who did the new Star Trek movies, the reboots, Alex Kurtzman and Robert Orci. And they
awesome.
And obviously those two are also involved in the Star Trek Discovery as well.
Mm-hmm.
This is based off Ender's Game, the book, which has a whole series by Orson Scott Card. Holly, you lent me this book, and I did read this book. It's very interesting. Reading the book and then seeing the movie almost right after. I didn't want to see the movie first.
Yeah.
So I saw that and just see the little, the nuances that are different. And there's a lot of stuff that's more described in detail, but for the most part, the movie hits every part that, that was in there. So
the most important parts, they definitely, they went over.
Yeah, they hit, they didn't skip anything, or they didn't make up anything that wasn't there.
Right. So, did you like the book?
I liked it for a lot of things. I liked it for things I didn't think I was going to like it for. It almost wasn't even a sci-fi book. I mean, it obviously dealt in sci-fi themes, but it was more about getting into the psychology of how to of strategy and how to defeat enemies and stuff like that. It wasn't necessarily.
It was more warfare.
Yeah, it wasn't entirely, and it's also how to how to navigate people to get there, either put them
to
into
get your desired outcome.
Yeah, like so if you have someone who doesn't like you, some people you have to attack head on, other people you can get to, you know, become an ally or maybe a cautious ally. And that's what we get for Ender's character. And we see that in the movie, of course, but it really goes into the details of how, you know, he's definitely the outsider, and mm-hmm. and how he keeps on getting alienated because of who we have for the character, Harrison Ford, his character in the book, Colonel Graf, he keeps on alienating everybody towards him, so they don't like him. Is Graf mom?
I think Graf is mom.
I don't know. you mean like the meaning of Graf? I don't know.
No. I mean, so in the book, General Graf was... I thought General Graf was the launchee's supervisor, basically. And in the book, he's referred to as mom.
Oh.
You don't remember that?
Yeah.
Isn't that Graf? I thought that was Graf. Let's see.
I don't think they called him mom. I could be wrong about that, but... He sort of was the guy navigating the whole getting, and he's the one who thought Ender was this, I don't know what you want to call it, chosen one or what have you, for that. So,
I would say that's what he chose. The chosen one is what he felt he was.
Yeah. He's like the Neo or something.
Before we get into the book though, I wanted to mention that a big reason that Michael is on right now is because this is one of the only sci-fi books or movies that he actually likes, and I think it does touch back to the warfare aspect. It's not super sci-fi, even though it literally takes place in space.
Right. Yeah. It's a
fact.
Yeah. It's one of those movies that it could take place anywhere, really. It doesn't necessarily have to take place in space. I mean, it's and the movie is really well done, so it's not like, I mean, that's all like cool eye candy to see with all the spaceships and, you know, the warfare and everything, but it could do anything.
Right about Graf, by the way.
Was I?
It is Graf. Yeah. Graf, I'm trying to see what the other guy's name is.
There's a couple different people. There's
Dap.
Okay.
Dap and Graf.
Dap was the big sergeant dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
he's
sort
mom.
Of. Yeah.
But anyway.
Strange mom. But so let's get into the actual story itself from the movie. So the movie starts off, we're obviously in the future, and humanity or the Earth is attacked by this alien race called the Formax. They're like a bug-like creature. They attack Earth kind of unannounced. Nobody knew it was coming, and they killed millions. And the Formac invasion is stopped by this hero called Maz Rakim. And we see this huge, you know, aerial fight in the atmosphere of Earth where Maz Rakim takes his jet and flies it into the queen ship. And it looks like he sacrifices himself and blows it up. And then, you know, the war is over because somehow, like a Borg queen or something, you know, telling the Borg to go to sleep, all the other ships just poop out and they fall out of the sky.
But you don't actually know that in the movie, actually.
Yeah, you don't see that
as
until
it's happening,
much
you have
later.
No idea.
Yeah, but that's the thing. Like,
he does ruin the movie for everyone.
Yeah, no, you can't. Well, if you listen to this whole podcast, we'll ruin the whole movie for you. So spoilers if you haven't seen it. So then we get sort of like that background of what's what happened before. So in the course of the next 50 years, the Earth's governments kind of combine and they take this gifted children and they're training for the international fleet to become commanders of a new fleet for a new counterattack against the Formac. The invading race. Now, the Formac hasn't been seen in 50 years, so nobody knows where they are at the moment on Earth. So they are unaware. But we'll find out later that the international fleet is quite aware where the Formac alien race is. So we get to see the Cadet Andrew Ender Wiggum, which is played by Azza Butterfield. And he plays in a bunch of movies that you might not have seen. One of them, actually, that's really good if you ever get a chance, is Martin Scorsese did a 3D movie called Hugo. And it's actually a really fun movie to watch. I didn't see it in 3D. I just saw it on Netflix. And it was really entertaining, so I enjoyed that. So we have him playing Ender.
He's in a lot of stuff.
Yeah,
he's the boy in the striped pajamas. He's obviously in Hugo. He's in so many things.
He's in a bunch. I mean, he's definitely been in a lot in the last.
Miss Peregrine. He's the lead in Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children.
Oh, is he? I saw. Don't you? You're into. Is it Merlin? Do you watch that? Do you watch that show?
Yeah, he's in an episode or two of Merlin.
I think he was credited as Mordred. I think that's what it was. I could be wrong about that.
So, I don't remember who he played. It's been so long.
Which is weird because this whole movie, he is he's actually British, and you wouldn't even know it.
Mm-mm.
For a young kid to, you know, have a basically an American accent and not know.
I feel like no, it wasn't this actor. Never mind. I was going to say that I feel like I just recently watched a documentary on an actor, a young actor who was English or Australian, and they were able to totally do an American accent, like totally. And but it wasn't him.
Well, it's like that guy from House MD. He's totally British, but you would he's watching House MD, you wouldn't even know he's British. So it's pretty amazing.
Never know.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So we get to see Ender Wiggum. Wiggin. Sorry. Yeah, he gets the attention of this Colonel Graf. And also this Major Gwen Anderson. Mm-hmm. And basically they have this device that's plugged into the back of his neck. And it's there to kind of monitor him in his younger age to see if this is like somebody they want to actually take and accept to go to battle school. If they get accepted to battle school, then they go through this rigorous testing and then they go to command school after that. So this is,
and I really wish they would have touched base a little more on that
in the movie,
in the book, or in the movie,
mm-hmm.
because in the book, you know, the there's you know a couple pages on monitors and how it works, and you know how many kids you can have, and it's only briefly touched on in the movie.
Yeah, it's really.
So it's there.
It's really, it's really interesting that they, like, you do get, like, the little strings part of the book, but then they don't, like, they call, like, when Ender meets his, is there with his kid, with his brother and sister, they call him a third. We don't know what a third means in the movie, but if you read the book,
right.
It basically says the parents are only limited to two children, and a third is, like, costs extra money, and there's, like, kind of, like, a shame attached to it, because you're being, like, kind of greedy about wanting to have more kids. So
and I wish that in the movie they could have kind of touched on that a little more, only because like it didn't really, like Asta Butterfield is narrating the first half, like the first opening to the movie, and then the end of the movie, and you know he kind of walks you through it, but he's not very, you know, it's he can't just sit there and read you the book.
Yeah.
So we talked about, you know, how his sister is too kind for battle school and his brother is too cruel.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wish that they would have at least given him a little bit of room to say something like, so the government allowed my parents to have me because they were hopeful that I would have a mixture of both traits.
Mm. Right, exactly. Right.
And like, it would have been a little more, obviously Michael would have been bored as shit if he had heard that. So.
It's true.
He's over here fidgeting. Like,
he's like, come on. Well, we get this. So after we get the kind of the intro, we get the him in school and he's playing a video game or some kind of simulation video game of warfare with this kid named Stilson. And he just big, you know, boorish kind of kid, kind of bullyish.
The bully.
Yeah. And later on, after he beats him, in the game, he wants to play again, but, you know, obviously Graf says, or Harrison Ford's character says, he's not going to do it again because he knows this kid's egotistical and he's just going to play into his ego and just enrage him more because Ender will beat him no matter what. And so later on, he gets called up to get his monitor pulled out.
Yeah, they decide to take it out and see how he fares with feeling like he was booted from the program.
Right, and we get this, like, he's like, this isn't going to hurt a bit, and they rip it out of his neck.
Yeah.
And the book, yeah, the book is pretty rough too. When they botch it a little bit in the book as well. So they kind of hit that as well. And same in the movie. But so later on, he's dejected. He's like, "Oh my god, I flunked out of this program. Mom and dad are gonna hate me," and you know, all the things that are going through his mind. And that's when Stilson and his cronies gang up on him. And they pull him back in this room, and they gonna like beat the crap out of him. And this is Ender then decides he'll fight him one on one. And when he does, he grabs one of the Formac alien, like, I don't know, arm or hand or something that's like kind of sitting there.
Yeah, in the science lab.
Yeah, and he just starts just bludgeoning him with it. And he just takes him down, and he won't stop kicking him in the, you know, kicking him in the ribs. So,
and he warns him too. He's like, "Stay down," and he doesn't. And Ender, let's all be honest. Asa Butterfield is a very scrawny actor.
Yes,
but like he was a lot younger in 2014 than he is now, and he's a small kid, so. He takes this bully down.
Right. And the thing is, his mentality, which is explained later, is that he gives him such a bad beat down because his thought is that if he takes him down and hurts him as bad as he can now, he won't ever want to fight him again or bother him again.
Yeah, I think he says the first fight was knocking him down. Mm-hmm. I wanted to make sure I won all the other fights as well.
Right, exactly. It's a brutal way of thinking, but it does work if you're thinking of someone who's an aggressor and isn't going. You don't want any more trouble from them. So if you do, if you hit
them, makes complete sense.
It does. And the one thing that we don't get in the movie as much, and we'll get into this more, I'm sure, but in the book, he keeps on comparing himself to his brother Peter. He's like, "Oh, I'm just like Peter. I'm just this awful, like, you know, violent person." And he keeps on worrying about that part. He doesn't want to be like his brother. So he gets back. He goes back home, obviously, and then we have the scene where. You know, his sister Valentine's there, and she's kind of consoling him. And then his brother comes, and they get into this. They're playing for a minute, playing bugs, and
you know, I thought that was really out of place.
Yeah,
and super like the way that they filmed it was really unnecessary. It really didn't tie into the scene in the book at all. And
the scene in the book was a lot longer and a little more violent too. But
and it wasn't like. Ender didn't just, like, offer to play the bug in the book.
Yeah.
So it was just, like, it was very out of place. And I don't think that they really, if they were going to show that in the movie, they really didn't need to show the kind side of Abigail first. They could have, you know, Peter could have been taunting Ender, and then Abigail could have come in and rescued him, and then they could have had this conversation where I feel like it just would have flowed a little better.
Just so you know, her name's not Abigail, it's Valentine.
Oh, I'm sorry, Abigail Breslin is the actress.
Is the actress, okay. I didn't know her. Yeah. I didn't know her real name, but oh. Okay, it's cool. I didn't know that. I didn't remember her name. So we basically see that Peter's the aggressor, and we see that Ender's kind of like, obviously he's a little brother, so he's getting picked on by his older brother, and he even like threats like, "I could kill you right now" and stuff like that. It's pretty violent, and you're like, boy, this is, you know, like, we're only like probably 10 minutes into the movie, and we see Ender, you know, getting in two fist fights, and it's, you know, rough for this kid. So you kind of feel bad for him already. Mm-hmm. So next we have a dinner scene, and the parents are a little upset, but they're not like, you know, super like, they're not, they don't blame him. I think if
I don't know,
the father even says,
father said a damn word. Did he?
He did. He said, I tried out for some program and I'm, you know, and I failed out too or something. He made some kind of comment like that. So, but he wasn't like, but he wasn't
maybe very, he had a safe face cause he was not appearing as like he gave a shit.
Yeah. That, well, for sure. And then we get the visit from Graf, Colonel Graf, and who's the other lady? Her name is Major Anderson.
Gwen Anderson.
Yeah, Gwen Anderson. So they show up and they said, "Well, that was the final test. We wanted to see what he would be like if he got, after he got his monitor pulled out, and he passed, but they didn't realize that he got in a fight with that Stilson kid, and he explains the reason why he beat Stilson so bad. And they're like, well, this is like, you pass so you can go to battle school. And from there, Harrison Ford's character, Graf, says, you know, if it wasn't for the fate of the world, you know, we wouldn't be, you know, grabbing kids like you, but this is something we really need to find our next big leader. And in the book they talk about it more, but they're looking for the next Julius Caesar, Alexander the Great kind of character or military leader. And they keep on calling the Ben Kingsley character Mazar Rackham as that type of leader, but apparently they need a new one to fight the Formac. So he gets put onto the shuttle. We get the one scene that was omitted that I was from the book was he gets in a slight fight, a tussle on the ship going up with one of the ship. Yeah, and with the zero G, and he kind of figures out how he can throw the kid in zero G and stuff like that. And and Graf, again, just like the book, kind of points out right to Ender saying this is the smartest kid on the whole damn transport, you know, and singling him out, making him. And he even later, Ender says, you know, you made everyone hate me kind of thing. So, and
he did it on purpose.
Yeah. He's alienating everybody to him. So he won't have any friends.
Yeah.
And he wants that.
He also did that. Mm-hmm. He like the part that I liked about Ender with that is that Ender thought outside the box where all these guys were like more robots, you know, they just went by everything they were taught, and Ender went outside of what he was taught and his experience or whatever. And, you know, you found a way to win, which was pretty cool.
And what's interesting too, I read the foreword that was written by Orson Scott Card, and one of the things that he really, and you really see it in the book, is not just the idea of trying to command and trying to beat people in tactics, but he's also really fascinated with fighting in zero G, that there wouldn't be a two-dimensional plane, but there'd be a three-dimensional plane. So you have to think of up and down, left, right, also all forms. So this, he really tries to explain this in the book. And I think they do for a movie, for an action movie, they do a pretty good job trying to show you how disorientating that can be. Mm-hmm. So I think that's cool. I think it was a cool concept that he decided to focus on for this book itself. And it goes in a lot of detail, I think, just talking about fighting in zero G. So we get the transport. He gets there. This is
assigned to his room.
Yeah.
And
this is where we meet Mom. Mm. And it's basically, you realize that this is boot camp for kids that are probably like 10 some years old or maybe 12,
totally,
you know, and you're like, this doesn't feel right for kids that young.
One of the things I love is that at their first class, mm-hmm. no, not their first class, but within their, like, in the movie, within, like, their first week, she's like, this is basic rocket scientist, people.
This basic rocket. It's like, don't you get it?
Okay.
You dumbasses.
Basic bitch over here. Like, what?
It is pretty funny. That's funny because I remember that line, too, and I was like, that's kind of funny the way she said that, because most people go, it's just basic rocket science.
Yeah.
But we see that Ender is kind of like ahead of everybody, and that, but unfortunately he's on the outside of like the popular group, and he's got to try to learn how to get them on his side. And he does that by, in the book, it's much more spelled out how he does it, but he hacks into this computer and sends this message to make this kid look like a kind of an idiot who's kind of the group leader, but, you know, but then everyone ends up leaving.
Which was in that class.
Yeah.
When she's like...
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
But I think that's kind of
the turning point where he realized that he does need to be a leader. I think most of the time he just kind of was looking out for his own. Mm-hmm. But I think she says, Ender, come and, you know, explain how you answered this correctly. And he was like, you know, I think... so-and-so or so-and-so have a better grip on it than me, you should ask them.
Yes, exactly.
And I felt like that was what gained his respect from the other people.
Yes, exactly. And that's one of the cool things is that we keep on seeing that Ender uses. He realizes that certain people in his group have better qualities and that he can either...
And he reacts to them well.
You can either learn from them or you can utilize them in like you're, okay. you're better at that than I am. And so he's trying to figure that kind of stuff out. We get this scene too where he keeps on trying to write to his sister Valentine and he never gets anything back. And then he asks Harrison Ford's character Graf, why haven't I gotten those emails? And
he asks in they're basically being briefed in their bunk room.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And he asks in front of everyone and he gets
slapped down.
He gets in a lot of trouble.
Michael, being a military man yourself, how would that go down in real life?
Do you remember that scene?
Yeah, I remember the scene. I mean, nowadays it would just be a simple conversation. Before it would just been like, hey, are you retarded? Like, go fuck yourself. Get your shit when you get your shit.
Is that because they've changed how they do things in boot camp?
Oh yeah.
Well, I wouldn't say change how you do things in boot camp. I think it's just the way society is changing.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big reason why.
Okay.
Basically, there are less consequences nowadays to stupid everything. Things. Like, for instance, in the movie, he asks a question out of turn.
Sure. Yeah.
And he's like, what does he say to him? He's like, when his monitor was removed, he was like, what does he call it? What do they call it? Privacy privileges or something privileges?
Oh, right. Yeah. Like some free times and stuff like that.
Something rights. Yeah. Right. And Graf's like, you have the right to privately think whatever you want.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. But we can't allow your unsolicited thoughts to leave
this,
whatever.
This space station or whatever it was. Yeah. Yeah.
So like at boot camp, if some maggot was like, you probably can't even say maggot anymore. If some... what would you even call them if you don't call them maggots?
Trainee.
Recruit. Yes. If some recruit just randomly started talking to your, his drill instructor when he should have kept his mouth shut, what do you think would happen?
I don't know.
What would have happened in your day when you went in?
Oh, they would have taken us out to the sandpit and fucked us up for about an hour.
When you say that, do you mean they would give you a beatdown, or would they make you do some excruciating kind of labor or exercise?
Like, we would do push-ups and jumping jacks and burpees and push-ups and crunches for 30 minutes straight.
Wow.
In the sandpit, and then you don't get to shower. You only get to shower afterwards because you have to continue on with your day. It was your fault that you screwed up.
Oh my god, that's the worst.
And it's terrible when it's 95 degrees out with 100% humidity and you got sand in your shirt and in your pants and you have to walk around the rest of the day.
Yeah, you're just extremely uncomfortable no matter what. Yeah, yeah. Okay. And you're just probably just just covered in sweat because we're working out for, like you said, a half hour or whatever, and they're making you do all those exercises. That's terrible.
Oh, yeah, because in South Carolina at 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock in the morning, it already has 90% humidity. So you walk outside and 10 seconds later, you're covered in sweat. Like you just came out of the ocean.
Ugh.
Yep.
Gross. Gross. Well, we also get an introduction in this story of the battle school or the zero G area where they do these mock battles. And
the battle arena was great. I loved how they created it from the book.
Yeah, it is depicted pretty well. And I think they made it more robust than I imagined it from reading the book. They hit all the beats from the book, but they made it look really cool. And
yeah, I think the only difference that kind of bugged me was that the observation deck
mm-hmm.
was detached.
Oh, right.
So it didn't seem realistic enough to where they could actually monitor movements and things.
Right, right.
But, I mean, it looked good. Like, if you hadn't read the book, you wouldn't have questioned it.
Right, yeah. No, it looked good. I mean, and we get the intro when they all start going out and they're floating around, and Ender's trying to figure out how to orientate himself, and there's this character, Bean, that he kind of befriends, and they're like showing each other how to bounce off things, and basically, and then their gun does this thing.
So childlike. I loved it. It was a good touch.
Yeah. How to freeze themselves and what the guns do. So it was fun. It was cool to see them getting their bearings out in this zero-G environment. So as things progress, Ender is doing much better than anybody else, and he gets assigned to the Salamander Army, which
he doesn't get assigned until he beats that mind game.
Yes, I'm sorry, I forgot to mention that. And this is an ongoing thing in the book as well. Is this computer game where he has to, you know, choose this cup? Is one cup's poison, one cup's not? And he keeps on going back and forth. In the book, he does it like countless times. He just goes over and over. He's like, why am I not getting this? So it's like I keep picking the wrong thing, and then he finally just goes for the giant's eyes and burrows into the eyes, which is pretty grisly. And and they're monitoring this Major Gwen Anderson's monitoring with Graf, and they're just like, nobody's ever done that.
Right, so. And for the people who haven't watched the movie or read the book, Anderson's character she's basically monitoring all of these kids to make sure that they are mentally capable of what they're doing and that they're not going to be fucked up. Mm-hmm. And Graf is blocking her every chance he can get because he's just so convinced that Ender is the one who is going to end the war with the Formix. And this mental game was it was like a middle finger to Graf, because he was unaware that Ender could even access this.
Right.
And she's like, well, you won't let me near him, so
right.
I have to test his mental state somehow. And it kind of, I wouldn't say it backfires on her, because she is able to monitor his mental state, but it definitely doesn't, you know, happen the way she anticipates it.
No, and they don't. And then something else changed, which we'll get into later, but...
Mm-hmm.
So, like you said, that kind of gives them the idea that this kid isn't thinking within, you know, like the box. He's going outside of conventional thinking, and he's going to go in. That's why they put him into the Salamander Army, which is Commander Bonzo Madrid. And the kid
the
is
actor
so
who
gross.
Played him yes. was so good. He was perfect. And it's so funny because one of my good friends, this is her absolute favorite book. We went and saw the movie together, mm-hmm. and she was like, I hated him. I hated him so much. And I was like, you were supposed to.
Yep, exactly, exactly.
That was the point.
That was the point, right.
He was a Disney star from, like...
Get out of here.
He was
like one
he
of
was
the
from the
Mickey
like,
Mouse Club
Lizzie
stuff?
McGuire era.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was a... I can't remember what Disney show he was on.
No.
Probably. Oh, you know, I think he was on Hannah Montana.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Hannah Montana.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. But so this Bonzo character is basically Napoleon complex kind of uh-huh. thing going on. And he is not happy that he's got to take on Ender, because Ender is a nobody. And he doesn't have any skills, and when they go into the battle, he can't contribute anything, and he's going to make their scores go down lower. So what he decides he's going to do is just have Ender just sit it out, just hang out,
puke,
yeah, do nothing. So when they get into the first battle simulation, this is where Ender decides he's going to do his own thing. And he goes completely against what Bonzo says. And
honestly, I think that happened after the first.
Yeah, in the book.
Or, I think.
Yeah, in the book.
In the movie, Bonzo tells him that, you know, everybody has to go into the arena. So he tells him to hang back. And I think he does, and he doesn't do anything. But Petra.
Oh, Petra. Yeah, we didn't bring up Petra. Yeah,
train him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this chick in Salamander Army who's a total badass was like, well, on free time, let's go train. So they become friends, and she's training him, and he finds out, and then he's pissed. And that's when Ender.
You're right.
After that is kind of when Petra gets supposedly hurt. And Ender's like, fuck this, I'm going to go help Petra.
Right, and he runs to her rescue. Petra's sort of like the sharpshooter. She's very good, and the book kind of goes into how good she is. She's just a natural. Mm. Just like she can hit targets super easy, and she knows exactly. So that's what she helps Ender with. But like you said, she in the movie, she crashes into one of the obstacles that's in the 3D, the 0G.
She gets knocked out or something.
Yeah, and he goes rushing off, and this is when he decides that he's going to, take out some of the enemies because of that. And
this is when you see his genius shine. He gets just so smart. And actually, it was Petra's idea. She was like, play dead as long as you can.
Right, exactly.
It was great. And like the way that they actually did that fight scene, like I say fight scene, it wasn't really a fight scene. That action sequence was amazing. I loved how, they utilized the floating stars. He passed through some and like ricocheted off of them, and he grabbed that other guy's gun, and it was just amazing. I thought it was awesome.
It was
like it got me really excited.
It was a cool sequence for sure. And they so this infuriates Bonzo because Bonzo, obviously, he's so much wants to be number one, even though Ender made him look good. Bonzo just is infuriated by this whole thing because he's a small-minded person. And so this is where...
I think this is after he gets yelled at by Bonzo.
Oh, yeah.
In front of everyone. And Bonzo was like... He gave an ultimatum, and then Ender was like, come and see me in the hallway.
Yeah. Can I talk to you privately? He says...
Yep.
This is about the training aspect, too. One of the things they don't show in the movie, but in the book, he's training all his past friends from his past bunk, the group, the launchies. He's taking the kids and training them on his off hours to give them, like, a little extracurricular so they understand more. And Bonzo and stuff like that don't like that. And they make it worse and worse for them for a long time. So,
yeah. And, like, I love that in the book, it spans years. It's a little more realistic.
Yeah, it doesn't go as fast.
Yeah, I feel like the movie maybe spans a year, if that.
Yeah, it feels like it goes by very quickly.
Very quickly. And the book is like,
a couple of years go by for sure, if not three. I don't know exactly.
Yeah. How many. You'll end a chapter, and then the next chapter is like a year and a half later or something. And he's been doing X, Y, and Z. Yeah.
Right.
But I forgot about that. I forgot that he was training the people who came in with him.
There's other things too. I mean, with the book, like he gets transferred out of Salamander Army, goes to like the Rat Army and stuff like that, which is not touched in the movie whatsoever. It's not really important, right. But there's certain characters he does meet that he doesn't that aren't really described in the movie. Again, it's not super important, but they're like it gets into, like I said, like before, there's a lot of psychology of how he learns to, I guess it's called social engineering, where you realize in certain things how to manipulate people or how to navigate around certain social situations. So and he's, like I said, he's trying to get into command school. So this is basically what it's all about.
And like you say, he was trying to get into command, but like honestly, I don't know if he really was. I think he felt like he had to. And he was qualified, like naturally gifted in all of these fields, but yeah, I don't know if he was like an aspiration. I think it was more of like a, well, I'm a third, so I kind of have to.
I don't know if I took it that way. I think I'm kind of going the same logic you, but I kind of thought that it's what he was natural at. It's like some people are obviously natural musicians or natural artists. Some people are natural porn leaders, and they have something in them. So it's like when you watch a bird fly through trees, birds often don't fly into branches. They can navigate and go through those, and you never see one crash into a branch.
Right.
So it's one of those things where it's part of your nature, and somehow it's just you are built in with those skills or abilities, and it only takes, you know, the to increase that, you know, to exercise those muscles to become even better.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's how I kind of saw what Battle School was doing for him, and he was kind of learning how to flex those muscles and learning how to exercise those muscles. And that's mm-hmm. my takeaway. It was so – it's ingrained in his actual personhood, you know, who he was. So,
gotcha.
I mean, it's obviously never spelled out that way, but that's how I took it.
Some things are left to interpretation.
Yes, exactly. So we get another thing where Ender plays this another mind game where he gets like this this bug that's made out of leaves. So it looks like a Formac, which we haven't seen a Formac yet, but that sort of looks like that. And then he follows Valentine into this castle that crumbles, and inside the castle that crumbles is this like chamber where she's standing in the middle of, and mm-hmm. It's very cryptic. And this is where what's her name? And then at the very end, we see Ender turns into Peter, an image of Peter.
Yeah, like, I think, wasn't Valentine standing, like, in the middle of, like, an egg-shaped
yes.
mirror? And then yes. when she turned around, instead of Ender seeing himself, he saw Peter?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
Something like that.
So that's when we get this whole argument between Major Anderson and Graf. Like, she's saying, this isn't part of the game.
Where the fuck did these images come from?
Like, and there's certain images that he wouldn't even know that were they're supposed to be in there. So it was interesting. So there's something else at play there. We don't know what it is yet, but
it's so lightly, like, it's not even hinted at.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like passed off as a fluke.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which, if I hadn't read the book, I would be so excited. Like, Michael, do you remember? Michael hasn't seen the movie in a little while. We didn't get a chance for him to watch it
mm-hmm.
In the last few weeks. But do you remember when Ender was playing his game and he was a rat and he dug through the giant's eye and it took him to this world? And then the next time he went into that same game, he was with Valentine and Peter. And when he came out of the game, General Graf and Major Anderson were like, I don't know what the fuck happened. And they shut the game down. Do you remember that?
They took it away from him.
Yeah, vaguely.
Vaguely. Yeah. Oh.
Not in detail.
No. Well, I know you liked the movie.
No, but
so that works.
the issue with this is that what we'll get into later is there's a reason for why that happened,
yes.
but it's not spelled out in the beginning, and you have to find out a little bit later. You kind of like in the book really spells it out totally. So,
right.
But anyways,
I was just curious, Michael, if you had picked up on anything weird and nefarious about that like little scenario.
No,
you sure did not.
So if we get this, get the whole thing with the Salamander army. He gets he gets promoted by Graf to his own squad or army or whatever you want to call it. And this is the dragon and
dragon army,
which is pretty cool.
I've never heard of Dragon Army. It's been discontinued.
They never.
Why don't you just change the name? We already have the suit.
Yeah, exactly. So. So he puts together his own squad, and it's a lot of his old friends and stuff like that. So he from the
Did
old
he
ones.
Did he put them together, or were they just assigned?
They were assigned, but I think he felt better when he saw them, and
a lot of them were people he connected well with.
Yeah, exactly.
Like even the bully from the shuttle.
Yeah. Right.
Which they didn't talk about him being the bully from the shuttle in the movie, but
right.
What was that kid's name?
I can't remember. It started with a B.
Bernard.
Bernard, yeah.
Bernard was the bully in the shuttle, and he was actually on Ender's in his dragon army.
He's in the very end, too.
Yes.
so then we get this great sequences of them trying to go up in the ranks in their, during battle school, and how they implement some of the things by basically doing very unconventional things, like the one they put a rope around the wrong kid and throws him out there to find out where the enemy army's hiding.
Well, you know, that battle
mm-hmm.
was their first battle. They hadn't even practiced any kind of formations yet.
Yeah, right.
That was all off the cuff. And I think that they did a really good job with the movie showing Ender's quick wit.
Yeah, and it just
and a, yeah, one yeah. of the things I think before they even went to this battle, which was against two other armies. What was it? It was
Salamander. And
they
somebody
were like Salamander
else.
And like
I don't remember the other team or the other team, but it was yeah obviously. Basically, they were like, that's not fair. And they're like, well, you know, sometimes battle's not fair. You know, warfare's right. not fair.
Right. But Ender, when he first got, I guess you would call it the platoon, you know, his army, mm-hmm. he was like, if you have any ideas that are better than mine, I want to hear them. I can't be expected to do this all on my own. And, like, I feel like that built a lot of really good team spirit.
Yeah.
And the rope wasn't his idea, but I can't remember. There was something about that arm, that battle in particular that was inspired by somebody else. And I think it was when Petra ran up and he was like, Petra, you're in dragon. And she's like, you need a sub.
Yeah, because the one kid jumped off his bunk and sprained his ankle or something.
Yeah. Yeah. But he did. He took advice and he took experience from the people in his army, and he utilized that, which I think is good characters of a leader. What do you think, Michael?
I'd agree.
Yeah.
Ender seemed to do is he, one of the things I noticed in the book, and it's slightly touched in the movie, but like he sees Bonzo and he sees other squad leaders and he sees everything they're not doing or what they're not mm-hmm. doing well. And then he decides he's going to obviously do the exact opposite.
The opposite.
Because obviously that's not working. So you get these right. little like, you know, groups that are obviously whoever's their leader in that group. Some people have good qualities, but then their bad qualities kind of like wreck the whole squad. So,
yeah.
You know, so he's obviously using basically the opposite of what Bonzo would do, or Bonzo wanted to control the whole group. He's basically saying we need to work together and use each other's abilities to get us to be a better. And we see that happen during more and more fights that they're going up in the rankings.
Yeah.
So next thing the other thing we see is Graf. I think it's briefly shown, but basically that they don't have any more time, that the Formak are coming somehow. They're like an invading thing. It's like touched on.
Yeah. There's like a
graphic.
There's a brief visual of, and I actually watched it today, mm-hmm. but there's a brief visual of their army, like the humans' army and a planet. And he looks at Anderson and he's like, we're out of time.
yeah, basically.
Like, there's no more effing time.
Yeah. So they realize that the Formak are at least going to be invading at sometime in the near future.
Which they haven't in 15 or so years, or 50 years.
50 years, yeah, right.
Yeah, 50 years, and well, like, there's no indication that they're going to attack.
Right. But. So then we get this scene with Bonzo attacking Ender in the bathroom while Ender's
yeah,
taking a shower.
He's so prideful that he goes to attack Ender in the shower.
Right. In the book, Ender, this is funny because we talked about this a little bit, not the same thing, but in the book he convinces Bonzo that they have to fight naked because this is the only way, because it's man-to-man and there wouldn't be anything else to prove who's better, except other than their sheer fighting ability and brute force. We were talking about that in what was the episode? The Voyager episode, Beowulf. I can't remember what was the episode called where the doctor. Well, Beowulf in the thing fights Grendel the monster naked to prove what a badass he was. Like, I don't need armor to fight this monster. He takes off all his clothes and attacks him. The doctor in Voyager doesn't take off his clothes, so. But anyways, we get this fight, and unfortunately during the fight, Ender kicks Bonzo back and he flies backwards and he slams his skull against this ledge, and
it looks like a step down.
Yeah,
into the shower area.
And it looks like it does some spinal cord damage or something, that he's just like a vegetable or something.
Yeah, it's funny because I don't remember what happens in the book and how Bonzo reacts in the book, but the movie, it was super subtle, and like Bonzo didn't really move at all.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it could have been an acting choice, but basically like his tongue moved and his eyes only moved a little. I was watching it earlier and I was like, I don't remember how this was supposed to go down in the book. So I'm going to watch this scene, and I was it different in the book since you recently read the book?
It's relatively the same. I mean, it other than the naked thing, and you know, he ends up knocking him into something, and you know, he technically, which he doesn't know later on in the book, it's later revealed that he's dead. He did kill Bonzo. And he also, which they never told him early on, that he killed Stilson, the kid from school.
Yeah.
They never say this in the movie.
Crazy.
Yeah, but they never told him that. So Endrick's killing all these people as he goes along.
And he's got no idea.
Yeah, he does. They don't
reveal that. Not foreshadowing.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, it's fine. Just let him keep going. he's a killer.
Influences Ender.
He wants to quit. He quits Battle School.
He wants to quit. He does. And they let him, which I'm pretty sure if he wasn't Ender Wiggin and he tried to quit Battle School, they'd be like, you're a third. Get fucked and be back here in the morning.
Into the disintegration chamber.
Like, you're here, you belong to the government, and they allow him to go. And, you know, his vacation in the book is a little more fanciful. You know, he's on a lake, and he's on a raft, and mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. And, you know, Valentine comes to see him and talks him back into going to battle school. But it's like, I feel like in the book, wasn't it his choice? Like, Valentine was very open, and no, actually... In the book, Valentine convinced him to go back to battle school.
But in
the movie, they allowed Valentine to express her doubts. That's what it was.
Yeah, and the whole thing in the book, too, it's not really even talked to about anything. This is the last time we see Valentine, but in the book, we get going back to Peter and Valentine, how they're trying to fix things on Earth.
Yeah, there's like a government hiatus, and like they're being weird little political activists.
Yeah, they're like they're slowly taking over like the planet, and
and Peter was like the figurehead of this whole thing, and it was like, wow, you cannot let the government be controlled by Peter.
Right, exactly. So it was really interesting. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But that isn't touched at all in the movie, but Valentine in the movie convinces him to continue, and then he should, I guess, and he just wanted to see her too, because the book really expresses a lot how much he really loves his sister. So, yeah. The idea that it wasn't Valentine, but it was when he was in the Red Army. One of the other guys that he was in, I think his name was Dink. I can't remember, but he was like, "Do you ever notice we're all kids here and nobody cries?" No, and it's like, that's not children. He says, "I've read books, you know, from the past," and he says, "We aren't children. I don't know what we are." So,
I don't remember that.
Yeah, there's all these like psychology things about like how they are. So obviously, you know, Ender is dealing with a lot more than just an average whatever 10 or 12 year old.
Childhood.
Exactly. So as they are, Valentine convinced him to rejoin, Graf takes him back up, but this time he's not going to battle school. He is going to command school, and they take him far away, and they take him to a former Formac planet, and it's like a colony of some sort. And we get all these weird, like, landscapes where obviously the Formac creatures were crawling through and through the earth or the planet.
Right.
It was really bizarre, you know, because when you got into Ender's room, you see these holes and stuff like that, that they'd burrowed through or something. So it was really weird.
Well, yeah, they didn't until Ender was in this last stage of his schooling. Mm-hmm. They really didn't mention the fact that the Formics look like ants.
Right.
And
we didn't see anything about them other than their spaceships.
No, other than their ships. And their ships aren't particularly ant-like.
No, we don't see anything about that. Well, and so while he's in his room, he lays down he's looking out the window, and who's sitting there right behind him is Mazarakum as Ben Kingsley character with his face tattoos on.
And Ender has no idea.
Yeah, and there's this like weird, I don't know, like interaction where he's like asking him questions, he won't answer him, and then he like, you know, kind of like Mazur throws him down on the bed, and he's got his arm like he's gonna break it or something, and And he says, why would you give, Ender says something like, I give up or something like that. And he's like, why would you allow your enemy to, why would you concede to your enemy that you give up or something like that? I forgot the exact line, but I thought it was actually a pretty interesting exchange between them too. How his view of warfare was. So,
right.
And then he goes, he wanted to know how he stopped the Formax attack 50 years ago. He says, you know, I saw you fly up, but I didn't see what happened afterward.
And I felt like in the movie, this was kind of a callback to the shuttle leaving Earth and entering zero gravity.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like it was like you got to see, and it's probably a tribute to, attributed to Asa Butterfield's amazing acting skills, but the point of realization was super clear. Like, it was a huge tie back from when he entered zero gravity and he had that thought, and that's why he started laughing. And this, you know, he's talking to Maser Rackham and he's talking about, you know, what really happened. You know, the vid's always cut out. I want to know what happens at the end. And I can't remember what he says, but he says something that causes Maser Rackham to show him the live feed from his actual head cam.
Exactly.
And watching Asa Butterfield as Ender process this new information, where Maser Rackham plays him the live feed of what actually happened that they don't show the public, was amazing. And I just love this little actor who, well, I say little, he's probably, I don't know, like 25 now.
Yeah,
but
right.
He was just great. And he made me believe that he was Ender. And the way he reacted was awesome.
Yeah.
And exactly like I expected it in the book.
And the one thing that Maser says to him is like, you know, like basically he just before he crashes into the queen ship, he ejects. So that's how he survives. And he says, after he blew it up, the queen ship, all the other ships went dead, and they start falling out of the sky, and they realize that they're sort of like a hive, like you said, like an ant kind of colony, or maybe a bee colony kind of thing. And he says that, like, you see something, I saw something in your visual, something that, you know, when you flew through those clouds, and how did you know? And he said that I saw that all of them grouping in a certain area. So I figured that must have been the command ship.
Yeah. Was super attentive. It was great.
Yeah. So it was cool. So obviously we get the kind of connection between the two, and this is where we get the, in the command school, they have the whole, a lot of the people that he was with before from battle school. We see Bean, and we see, what's her name? What's the girl's name? I forgot her name.
Already. Petra.
Petra.
And Eli, and that bully's name.
Oh, Bernard.
Bernard.
Yeah, and we so we have this, all these ships, and Petra is in command of this one ship that has a giant gun called the Molecular Detachment Device, and it's capable of basically disintegrating matter. And I guess if there's things that are connecting, it just totally obliterates it. It's sort of like a massive atom bomb or nuclear device, but in huge.
It's like a chain reaction, like whatever is closest to it, it destroys.
Yeah, just disintegrates.
Like the way an atom splits or whatever.
Yeah, it just disintegrates matter. So we get Ender going through all these battle simulations, and they're going through all these things where they're fighting the Formac and out in space, and they're hitting, you know, how we see mistakes. Like at one point, Ender smashes one of the other ships by accident.
Yeah, you told me to go full throttle, and like he's like, pull back.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of little things, and we get like Graf still believes that he's the one, and even Maser Rackham's like, I don't know, maybe he's not it, and you know, it's like he's got to be. We don't have any more time, so we keep on getting this idea that there's something coming real soon, and we don't know what it is. And then we get his supposed to be their graduation, where they're going to, this is their final thing to graduate command school, and they have all the big wigs, and I think, like, I don't know if he's the president of Earth or whoever he's supposed to be, but he's even there to watch this.
Yeah, and I don't remember if before this, there was a big presence of Ender's dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
But the images that he got, didn't the images that he got from his mental game that Anderson had quote-unquote set up, mm-hmm. once he got to the Formix planet, weren't they supposed to just naturally happen?
Are you talking about in the book, or are you talking about in the actual
Well,
movie?
I mean, in the book they were supposed to, but I know they didn't in the movie.
Right. Yeah, and I don't think anything happened that forward, because it's kind of like they kind of kept going through, because even Anderson, we barely even sleep now, because you just keep on putting us through all these battle simulations.
Okay.
So he's not getting a lot of sleep. They're all burnt out, basically, because they just keep on going through these simulation battles.
Well, there's something that happens in the movie, because we're at graduation day already, and the night before he's talking to Petra about, you know, all of his feelings about the Formix, like, why haven't they come looking for us?
Right.
And,
right.
You know, how do they speak? Maybe we could talk to them.
And Petra's like, it's 1 in the morning. Shut up.
Yeah. She's like, we've got to be up really early for graduation. Like, I don't think we should be talking about this right now. Like, this is ridiculous. So I just wanted to kind of
you're right.
I don't remember that they actually had a good depiction of his dreaming and like why he felt mentally connected.
I think he went back and he was dreaming about that one sim where the leaf bug creature was looking right at him, and he was dreaming about that, and he was thinking like, maybe I can communicate with them. Maybe they communicate in another form than other than vocals, vocal communication. And so here again, we're seeing Ender thinking outside the box, and he's obviously thinking harder about things than other people maybe are, or observing things that other people haven't. So during the battle, the final graduation battle, they're all set and ready to go, and they're attacking the Formax homeworld. And like I said, they have the full, like, all the high brass are watching them do this attack. And it's a pretty cool fight space sequence where they're...
Oh, it was so good.
All the ships flying around each other, and, you know, and they're, like, the Formax planet has, like, an asteroid ring around it. And when Petra fires the cannon, it, like, obliterates all that and their ships, but there's still more ships. And then they just go right down to the planet, and this is where Ender has Petra fire her molecular attachment device one more time, and just incinerates the whole planet's surface.
Right.
And this is where the twist comes in the end. So if you haven't seen Ender's Game or read the book and you want to keep it a surprise...
We already spoiled it for them.
We spoiled it, but we're going to spoil it even more, is that this was never a simulation. All these games that they kept on doing, these were the real thing. Yeah. And this is the real thing. They went to the Formax planet and committed genocide.
Yep. And so Ender finishes this task, and they're watching the planet burn up, and he turns around and he's like, how about that? Like, how about that? And they're like speechless, and they all turn around, and he's like, why did that not please them? Like,
right.
I did everything they wanted me to. Like,
And then we get another video feed after the game's over. Like, why are we seeing this? Like, why are we seeing this planet burn?
Yeah, he doesn't say video feed. He says resume.
Like observation or something. I don't know. Like,
it's not specifically observation, but yeah. And so it goes back to the feed, and they see this scorched earth, and they're zooming in on all these, you know, crumbling terraces. And Ender is mortified, and he's like... What am I looking at? And Graf comes down behind him, and he's like, you are amazing. You did such a great thing. And Ender's like, please tell me what just happened. Like, I don't understand what's going on. This was a game. And Graf is like shaking his hand. He's like, you will go down in history. And he's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Right, right. And then he comes out. He's like, this was never a simulation. This is the real thing. So...
I don't think Raph actually ever comes out and says it. I think Ender ends up realizing that he's like, you fucking monster. Like, we could have spoken to them. Like, they communicate differently.
Right. And he's like, I committed genocide.
Mm-hmm. I will live with the shame of this.
Right.
And he's like, you will live as a hero.
Right. He's like, exactly. Yeah, it's intense, and they actually have to sedate him during that time. So he's sleeping, and he's got all these, he wakes up, and he's upset, and he looks out his window again, and he sees off in the distance the Formax structures that were on the planet they're on currently that they took over. And he says that he realized that they're similar to the castle that he saw in that video game where he saw Valentine. And
yeah. Can I stop you for a sec?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I just wanted to try and get Michael to come into the conversation for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Michael.
Yes.
If you were in Ender's position and you were under the impression that you were leading an army as an admiral or, a general, like, what would you, if you thought it was a simulation, would you risk all?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so what if you knew it was not a simulation? Would you still risk all?
If it meant getting the job done, then yeah.
Okay, so there wouldn't be a lot of hesitation.
Probably not.
As long as you knew, like, for certain that it was the right thing to do, like, you would do that.
Yeah, you got to eliminate the threat.
That's right.
I think, though, sometimes you might hedge sometimes because, I mean, maybe not you personally, Michael, but I think a lot of people would hedge if they don't know if it's a game. It's like a lot of times people play games or they talk. It's basically you talk a big game, but can you actually do it? And when it comes down to it, like, would you actually be able to, like, I don't know, some people, like, can jump off, something really tall or something like that. In a video game or VR or something, it seems, sure, no problem. But when you're actually doing it, can you actually just jump off this thing, like bungee jump off a really high thing? And can you actually have the guts to do it? So a lot of people don't, in games and stuff like that, people do crazy shit. But when it comes to something like real life, you're like, do I really want to do that? Kind of thing. So
that's why they kept it as a training simulation for him the whole time, because they knew that if they told him it was the real thing, that he would have never went through with it, and they would have never figured out how to, basically commit genocide and kill the whole planet.
Right, right.
I have a question, Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
The way you phrased something earlier, you said that they hedged on something. What does that mean?
Oh, like you hedge your bet. Like a lot of times people, like they're hesitant. Like they don't know if that's something they're going to actually, kind of like when you, like I said, like if you could say like, hey, you want to go bungee jumping? And you'd be like, yeah, sure, no problem. Yeah, I'd do it. And then you get up there and all of a sudden you're looking off the side of that bridge or wherever you're going to jump. And you're like, nah, this is really fucking high. I don't know if I'm going to do this, that's when you start hedging. You're like, nah, I don't think so. So,
well, that's the reason why I thought that was interesting was because I'm pretty sure that in the Enderverse, the leaders are known as hegemon.
Oh, hegemony, right? Yeah, right.
Yeah,
yeah, right.
So I was like, that's kind of on the nose.
I don't know what the word source of hedging your bet comes from. Like it comes basically like you're hesitant to go full in or something like that. But it probably has some kind of connection, hedge and hegemony.
Gotcha.
I have no clue.
I haven't read all of the books in the Enderverse or in the entire series of Ender's Game, but
yeah.
I just thought that was interesting that you brought up that word. And you'd only read Ender's Game, so I was like, I wonder if he knows.
No, I don't. I don't know. I don't know any of that.
The hegemon is like the big, I would say the big bad, but only from the perspective of Ender.
Right, because he doesn't. This is one thing we noticed more and more with Ender, and it's really spelled out in the book, is that he just does not like taking orders.
Right.
He doesn't want to hear it from these people because he thinks they're a bunch of idiots.
Right.
And it becomes more and more clear as time goes on. So back to the movie. like I said, he's looking out the window. He sees those Formax structures, and then he kind of recognized from the ruined castle from that game where he saw his Valentine. And he believes at this point that something's trying to communicate to him. And that's when he gets Petra and him run out into the surface in their spacesuits, and they have like the breathing apparatus to run out there. And he ends up going into the structures where he finds a dying Formac queen with one of her eggs.
Yeah.
And this is where he decides he's going to use that egg, and he's going to make good and at least repopulate the race. Ender's then made to become admiral.
He's promoted to admiral.
And he takes a small ship, and he basically takes this this egg on this into deep space, trying to find a place to put a new Formac colony for the queen. Actually, the book even ends saying that. It says something like, it says that he looked for a long time, that he was with this hive queen or the cocoon, and he was flying around in the universe, flying for a long time. So
looking for the proper place to put him.
Exactly. So, well, Michael, we got you as our guest. This is a movie that you really enjoyed. What is your thoughts of this movie, and what makes this movie better than other science fiction that you usually see?
I don't know. I think the reason I liked it was because of the military aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the kid that overcomes the odds and shows that he's able to take control and lead a bunch of misfits and whatnot. So I think that's just the biggest reason why I enjoyed it.
Right. Are there any special scenes that you think are better than others, or anything particular that you're like, well, this makes me think of certain situations that you, I mean, obviously you were never out in space, but, you know, something similar to what you've gone through as in your career?
Well, just leading a bunch of idiots.
Well, there you go.
That's some special kids that I've led.
It's funny. Good job here, you idiots.
He would never tell them good job.
No. Interesting that introduction in the book, Holly, Orson Scott Card talks a lot about how he was fascinated by military history, and how he read like the rise and fall of the Roman Empire, the Civil War, and he would read about the generals and their tactics and stuff like that. So it was pretty cool, because this was obviously inspiration for the Ender's Game, but obviously Ender's Game is totally set in a sci-fi world. But he's drawing from all those experiences in his processing of them. So,
right,
Holly, what did you think about this movie?
Well, I loved the book, and I actually, when Michael was deployed the first time, Barnes & Noble donated a bunch of Nooks to soldiers.
Okay.
Even though Marines are not soldiers. They're Marines. And Michael got a free Nook, and it came with a bunch of militant reading. Mm-hmm. And Ender's Game was one of those. And I read it if I didn't read it in under 24 hours, I read it in around 24 hours.
Cool.
I could not stop reading it. I was obsessed. Nice. And then as soon as I finished reading it, I was like, everyone I knew who liked to read, I was like, you need to read this book. And it was such a great story. And then when the movie came out, I had a friend who, this was already one of her favorite books.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, wow, we need to see this movie together. And I think it was while our husbands were deployed, we went to see Ender's Game. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing. And if you're looking at it as a comparative from like novel to screen, I felt that it did a really great job. The only complaint I had was that it didn't really depict the span of years.
Right.
But it worked without it.
Yeah.
Like, they made it work without it. And obviously, the dynamics between Ender and his siblings could have been played up in flashbacks or memories or whatever, but it would have taken away from the amazing battle scenes that they were able to accomplish. Like, that arena was amazing.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Yeah, I agree. I think they hit all the important beats that they had to hit for the book. And you know, there's obviously a lot of nuances, like we've been talking about throughout our discussion here, where there's things that could have been fleshed out and you'd get more information about, but I don't know if it would really progress the plot on the movie. And there's a lot going on to get to point, you know, get to him as a student on Earth to, you know, destroying the Formac, you know, homeworld. You know, I mean, it's a lot of leaps to get to. So they had to get him there as fast as they can within the, you know, whatever it is, the 2 hours of the movie. So,
yeah, they had to establish some kind of pressure.
Yes.
Yeah. So I get that, but it was a great film, I thought. And I think that, you know, it was a short book. It wasn't a very long book. Mm-hmm. And they did a great job following the, like you say, the important nuances and depicting like what the story was about. And right. I feel like the story was about taking your circumstances and knowing not just how to, I think that's wrong. I think, what does Ender say? It's not that you win the fight, it's how you win the fight.
Oh, in the end, yeah, he says that.
Super important.
Yeah,
like
how we do it, right? Yeah, are you going to fight dirty, or are you going to fight, you know, the right way to do it?
Exactly. Like, your character is fully reliant on how you carry yourself, how you win the fight, and you know, yes, when Ender was in school, he accidentally killed some kid on the bus.
Well, in the classroom.
Movie,
yeah, in the classroom. Yeah.
You know, he kills a kid, and Ender doesn't know.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, with the whole shower scene, and he accidentally kills Bonzo, like, Ender has no idea that he's done that.
Yeah.
And then he plays this game, and it's real. He literally committed genocide on the Formix planet, and he had no idea. And, you know, it's a damn shame. Because a person who is ruthless and empathetic, like, those are great qualities to have, but they do come in a balance. Like, you have to know how to balance those. And I think, at least in the book, they're written really well.
Yeah,
to,
sweet and sour.
You know, compliment each other.
And, sweet and sour, the yin and yang kind of thing.
Yeah. So what did you think? Like, if we could, I know I talked a lot about the book, but mm-hmm. what did you think?
I like the book a little bit better for the nuances I got from it. The movie was well done. I enjoy the movie for a lot of things, like the stylistic. There's a lot of things, like I said, reading the book, there's a lot of things I wouldn't have probably imagined the way they depicted the movie, and I think they did a better job than my imagination took me. Visually, you know, I think the nuances are stuff that they missed, but like I said, I don't think you could pack that all into the movie. There's a lot of things about the book that I like, and there's other things I take issue with. I mean, the idea, like I said, if you want to call it social engineering or learning how to command people or learning how to manipulate people to do your will or how to get around it. And also when to realize that there's no negotiation here, we have to just completely obliterate this person or take them down. So, and when to call those shots, that's the hard part. I don't think I've ever known exactly how to do that. Like, you know, when he's like, well, maybe I'm just nice to them and maybe they'll be good to me. Like, and sometimes it doesn't work at all, you know, because that person's just a complete asshole, you know?
Right.
So I don't think I've ever really mastered that, but it's a great look into that. And it does take a special talent or some kind of skill that you have to learn how to do. And like I said before, you know, military history and looking and all that stuff, how these generals and admirals figure out what's in their mind and how to, you know, beat them at their own game or beat them where they wouldn't expect to be, you know. So that's the interesting side of it. The weird side of it for me, other side is you know, you're talking about child soldiers. It's a little strange. Like, I get why they're doing it, because obviously kids are more malleable. Like, you can teach a child a language a lot quicker.
No, I thought that the director or the screenwriter really hit it on the head in the beginning when Asa is narrating the intro. He talks about why.
Right.
And I don't remember what it is, but it's basically the fact that children are fearless.
They are, for sure. The only thing I would take issue with, just knowing my children, and obviously my children aren't going to ever take over the world, for that's for a fact, but
you never know.
Well, maybe they will, but not right now. That their mentality is extremely, you know, all over the place, and I mean, maybe you'd be conditioned to that. And obviously, we've seen, you know, other children. We've seen children survive living in, like, you know, working in coal mines, you know, back before there were child labor laws. So, I mean, there's lots of things. Children can adapt to a lot of things, of course, but they can be very undisciplined too. So, I mean, it's like, it's kind of a weird thing. So that's one thing I was like, that's kind of weird. The other thing is, I've seen this. Story kind of unfold in a couple of things. Starship Trooper or Troopers, kind of the same idea, you know, like these troops out fighting giant bugs in space.
The bugs?
Yeah.
See? Mm-hmm. I don't know, because, like, yes, it kind of depicts a similar thing, and maybe Starship Trooper, was Starship Troopers written around any kind of book?
Yeah, it was by Robert Heinlein, and it was written in the 50s, where this was written in the 80s. And like I said, Ender's Game, to me, the sci-fi aspect is a side plot. I mean, other than the zero-G and, you know, the spaceships and stuff like that, I mean, that's not the important part of the book.
Right. No, it's honestly, the story, which the movie is great, but it really does not depict the amount of mindfuckery that happens to this kid.
Yes.
And even through all of this fuckery, he is an amazing human.
Right, right.
Like, and he doesn't have to overcome his peers or anything crazy. He has to come to peace with that. And I have not read, you know, Speaker of the Dead, or there are so many books in this series, which, if anyone's interested, we can either read them off or add them to the show notes or whatever, but it is a great series. And I haven't read everything. I just know that he's an awesome human, and he overcame all of this adversity, I guess.
Right.
Not adversity,
right.
Because it wasn't that, like, the whole populace was completely different. Mm-hmm. He was just one among many. This sounds really Borg.
It does. It has a kind of a Borg kind of thing to it. But these are all common tropes, though. I was going to also say, like, Starship Troopers was a thing. The other one I read recently, maybe 2 years ago or 3 years ago, I can't remember, is Old Man's War, where it's the opposite, where you become an old man or old woman. They recruit you, and you go through this rejuvenation process where they shoot you through these drugs, and you become young again. But this is where you're recruited to fight up in space. Mm. So it's called.
So you get to live a nice life on Earth,
right,
where it sucks and there's no food because your planet is, like, trying to guard itself.
Yeah, it's an interesting novel. It's called Old Man's War. It's a fun book to read. But a couple other interesting things. So Ender's Game was published in 1985, and I guess a lot of people wanted to make movies about it for a very, very long time. And Orson Scott Card was reluctant to license the film rights because he wanted the artistic control of the novel. And so I guess he had lots of opportunities before that ever happened, but he didn't go along with it until 2013 was released, but it was, like, I think 2011, 2012 when it was announced. Right. Other thing, so when it was all starting to get together, people that were talked about as to play to play Ender was, one of them was Jake Lloyd, who played the kid in Phantom Menace. Yeah, he was in consideration for Ender Wiggum, and so he thought that was going to be there's some other really bizarre stuff. Somebody else named Nathan Gamble to play Ender. I don't know who that is. And also he brought out that Graf might have been changed to a female character. And they were talking to two different females. Like, wait to hear this. The two different females that Card threw out as possible to play Graf. Janine Garofalo or Rosie O'Donnell.
Okay, I recognize Rosie O'Donnell. Who is Jean Garofalo?
Jean Garofalo is a comedian. I'm trying to remember. She was used to be on the Ben Stiller. She's in a ton of like movies, and she plays a lot of offbeat characters, but anyways.
So how could either of those personalities,
I don't know,
really take on,
I don't know,
the severity of General Graf? Like, hey, I don't see gender, I don't care.
Yeah,
I don't care if it's a female, I don't care if it's, it doesn't matter to me.
It's just funny. It's just,
but
it was that there
General
was
General Graf's character, like, you have to be a hard ass, and neither of those people really fit. That's bizarre.
Right. Mazza Rackham was one of them was Will Smith to play his character, but they, obviously they got Ben Kingsley for that. So that was just funny. The movie, the budget of the movie was $110 million to $115 million. But the box office was only $125.5 million, so it just barely made money for it. It didn't do incredibly well for a movie. That's probably why we'll never get another Ender's Game movie. There's another aspect. I don't know if you're completely aware, but Orson Scott Card has got himself in a lot of hot water with people, because before 2013, Ender Scott Card basically spoke out against gay marriage and gay equality, and he didn't believe in it. And he got a lot of shit for that. And there was a lot of people that didn't want to have anything to do with the movie after a lot of that stuff came to light. So that might have hurt the movie as well. So,
yeah, I mean, I have to say that even my Facebook, which I've got a lot of friends on Facebook. I'm not an unpopular person, but I had one person who was like, fuck you for even going to support Orson Scott Card. Like, I was like, what? And he's like, oh, he's a misogynist and all this crazy shit. And I'm like, well, it's an amazing book.
Right.
And maybe you should read it.
Right. It's a hard thing to do, because I've dealt with this on all sorts of different things. And like, you, there's people I really enjoy their work, but then you find out that, you know, oh, that guy beat his wife, or that guy was, you know, end up, you know, doing something awful, or, you know, it's all sorts of shitty things. And you're just like, does that totally detract from the work if I enjoy the work? You know, like, can I still, you know, there's a lot of things like that, and tons of creative people. And I, go ahead.
The only thing I want to say about that, and I've been holding this in since I read one of the recent books in a series that I read, like, he didn't bring that, at least from what I've understood about everything I've read, he didn't bring any of his beliefs into his series. I have, let's see if I can count them, 17 or 18 books in a series.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so excited and so proud of these books. Like, the world was awesome. And I'm not going to mention the book series or the author's book. No, it was great. It's a vampire series. And
okay.
It's vast, and it's so well done. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. And then they've published two books in the last, I don't know, 2 years. And I bought one of them on digital,
mm-hmm,
because I knew I was moving, and I was like, oh, I'll read it on the drive out to California. And they decided whether it was, it's a mother and daughter team.
Okay.
And I don't know if it was a political thing for them to just feel like they couldn't hold their breath anymore, but they decided that they were going to take real life issues, mm-hmm, from the United States, like our current president,
mm-hmm,
and to make a mockery of that. and in their books.
Okay.
So for, like, I don't even remember if I finished reading this goddamn book because there was literally a chapter where they were mocking Make America Great Again, and like it was basically Make America. It was like make
Great Again.
Our town.
So what made you put that down? Like you were like, that's not why you're like, I'm not reading this for that, or what was the
No, I'm pretty sure I finished reading it. The problem was that they took this situation and they decided like it wasn't just one thing. Mm-hmm. If they had just mentioned that the evil new mayor of the town wanted to make that town great again.
Sure.
It would, like, okay, that's kind of on the nose, but I could probably forgive it. But it was like every chapter there was something else about our current president.
Sure.
And our current president is taking care of our military, and I don't want to get political, but so I'm not going to. I just, when you have a series that people love and follow, you can't bring your beliefs into it. And I felt really attacked that I have 13 of their books. Mm-hmm. And now I don't even want to buy the next books that they're going to publish in this series that I've invested in, that I've fallen in love with. Like, I'm so offended and I feel attacked. So I don't know if Orson Scott Card really is a bad guy. And if he really did, you know, I don't even know what he said that made him sound like a bigot, but people say he is, and I don't know, but I love Ender's Game. I think that it was written really well, and I still collect the books because once I have them all in order, I'm going to read them in order.
Right.
So I don't know. I loved the movie. I thought the movie was great. I'm really sad that it didn't make a lot of money because I would have loved a sequel. But I think the people that they chose to portray the people in the book were great, and I loved it.
I think it's just one of those things that I've had debates with other friends about, you know, certain people that you enjoy something from, but then, you know, you find out something, they do something kind of sleazy or bad, or, you know, or that makes, you know, makes them look like a complete, bad, you know, a terrible person. And, but if you still enjoyed it in the first place, can you still enjoy it now? I mean, maybe you don't agree with their politics, or maybe you don't agree with their religious views, or whatever it might be, or their social views. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to take the whole thing with it. So,
right.
And we're in a climate these days where, no matter if somebody says something or does something wrong, it's like, well, they said this at a certain time. Now, this is a little different for Orson Scott Card because he's definitely like part of like an anti-gay group. Like it's well documented. It's not, there's no question about it. But can you still enjoy Ender's Game just for what it is? Because there's really nothing in the book that even makes any hints towards that. So that's not even discussed in the book. So, I mean, it's like, we're not talking about that. So,
right. And I don't know, I don't mean to speculate, and I'm not insulting Orson Scott Card at all in any way. I hope I'm not. But it is kind of strange. I mean, a lot of people grew up in the age that these books were coming out, and they didn't really have any kind of community to accept them for who they were. But it is kind of interesting to think about that shower scene where they had a fight and he's like, well, we need to
do it to make it.
Yeah. So it's just kind of, I mean, I'm obviously, maybe there was some kind of other thought process there, but
sword fight.
To someone who doesn't really know what's going on with the writer or the world or anything, they might go, what?
Yeah,
These are 10-year-old and 16-year-old boys. Like, why are they naked in the shower together?
Yeah, I know. I don't know. It's difficult, and it's one of the things that I heard about because you know, I'm a big comic book guy, and he at one point Orson Scott Card was supposed to write a Superman series for DC Comics. And he got just, they shut him down because they were there. The a lot of people
because of all of the hate.
Yeah, because of the anti-gay stuff, and a lot of people were like, "How can you do that?" You know, and so he was basically walked away from that project because he realized that it was too mired in controversy because of his viewpoint. So I mean, it's difficult. It's a difficult thing to say, and you know, obviously nobody knew when he wrote Ender's Game and how he felt. And I don't even think it would have mattered then because the '80s was a totally different time.
Totally.
But now we're in a different world. So, I mean, it's where we try to be far more accepting of people. So, but anyways, Ender's Game movie, I enjoyed it. I think some points it could have been fleshed out better, but I don't know how. I don't have a distinct way how they could have made it a little bit better, but I think they could have made it. I think you're right. If they would have depicted it being a little bit longer, it would have been a little more believable. Like if they'd been right. Like, you know, 6 months later, you know, 2 years yeah. later, you know, it's that kind of mm-hmm. thing. Give just those yeah. little titles at the bottom of the screen so you know time has progressed.
But Asa, like, even now, if you look at the films he's in now, he still looks the same age as he was when he was, like, in the Boy in the Striped Pajamas. He just looks so young.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that as an insult, Asa. I absolutely love you, so don't take that poorly.
Right, right.
You're ageless.
Right, exactly. And it just looks like, what was that, when we did the Black Mirror episode, the guy who played
Bill Weasley.
Yeah. Yeah. How he's
this looks the same.
Super skinny guy.
He's just yeah. so young.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah.
Michael, do you have any thoughts? Michael's tired.
All right. Well, we'll get Michael so he can finish up whatever he's doing so he can get to work super early in the morning.
He's just literally going to take the earbud out and go lay down.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so, Synthaholics, you can find us at Synthaholics.com. You can also go to the Synthaholics group page and Facebook and join us there. We can we have lots of people interacting, and we post articles. So it's a fun little community. Definitely come check us out there. You can go to the Apple iTunes page. You can rate and review us there. And leave us 5 stars. A nice review gets people to make them aware of our podcast. As well, you can go to Patreon.com/Synthaholics if you want to throw us some money. We'd greatly appreciate it. Also, a great way to, you know, support the show is to tell people about the show. Tell them about Synthaholics, that we talk about Star Trek. We also talk about other sci-fi movies and even books now. So let them know that we're this is what we do, and we try to get into the whole depths of what the shows are about and what the movies are about.
And I love hearing from you guys.
Yeah, it's always fun. It's always fun. There's always people chime in and they tell us what they like or what they didn't like. So but true. so definitely Holly, anything else you want to say about this this great fun movie?
You know, even if my husband is kind of a really good example, he does not care for science fiction, not really. If it can't be believed, like if it's not very believable, he's not interested. So, you know, true life stories and stuff, like, he really enjoys, but he liked Ender's Game, and he is military, so it really did play on the military aspect and the mental fuckery that kind of goes along with that. So it's probably a good reason why he enjoyed it. But if you're looking to get your significant other into a movie, or even your parents into a science fiction movie that really isn't super science fiction centric, like, it really is. It's in a world where they are literally in a space academy, but, you know, the topic at hand is really not space. So I think that it will appeal to people who don't really care about that stuff.
You don't have to know a whole backstory of it. It kind of
needs
to give you the whole thing right there. So you're not coming in like, you know, who was that guy? What was that about?
Exactly. Like, it's a really enjoyable film, even if you're not really into galactic adventures, right. You know?
Right.
So I think it's a great film. I would have to say, Alex Monk, I hope you're listening. And if you have any more thoughts, what is your email, Aaron? Synthaholicsduo at...
at yahoo.com.
Yahoo.com. Yeah. Alex, this is your favorite book, and we went and saw the movie together, so it would be great if you could email them and we could kind of review this at a later date. But
yeah, absolutely.
If not, it's okay. I know you're busy. But yeah, it's a great film, and I'm sad that there won't be more, but there are plenty more books. I'm looking at a list of 18 printed books, and there is a book to be announced. The release date is to be announced from Orson Scott Card. So there are plenty of books to observe and read.
Always good to read.
Exactly. So that's what I think.
Awesome. Well, everyone, as Dave Duncan will say, he is away at RockCon, but we will get him back next week. Live long and prosper, one and all.
Well, McCoy, my boy, come mix me a drink. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink, and we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Drinking Tito's.
Okay, if you want to hit your clap there whenever you're ready,
okay,
Holly.
Alright, I just put recording on, so if you're ready, we'll count to three and clap.
One, two, three. I think it was off. Anyways, you get the point. If Dave needs it. Alright,
yeah,
so I will get started. Here we go.
Bye.
Cool. I think we did it.
I think we did it.
I probably fudged the ending a little bit with all the little outro. Like, I didn't say stuff about the music and shit, but, yeah, whatever.
Well, you know,
we can't always be as good as Dave Duncan.
He's got that. He has that promotional personality. Like, he can totally do the promo stuff, and I've mentioned it before, he just goes right into it.
Yes.
And there's no stopping him. He's like a robot.
Yeah.
And it's like, I sometimes kind of want to tell him, hey, slow down, because I don't know what you're saying.
I know. He's got that. He's got that.
He's good at it.
Yeah. Well, we were saying before, we've been doing it almost 3 years now, so it's like, it's a long time to be doing, saying those things over and over again, so.
You guys are like 10 or 11 episodes from 200 episodes.
Yeah, we're getting close to there for sure.
What are you going to plan for your 200th episode?
I don't know. We'll get married and we'll go to Hawaii on honeymoon. So.
I like it.
Isn't it romantic?
You going to take your wife?
Nah, she'll sit it out, I'm sure. Well,
she can come to California and hang out.
Yeah, she'll probably enjoy that. Michael, thank you so much for joining us and letting us use your voice and hear what your thoughts about this.
Absolutely. Next time I won't have to get up at 2:30 and not
be able to- sucks.